Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears off and running with you on this Tuesday, August the 18th, 2020. I about said Thursday. Tuesday, August the 18th, 2020, 14 and a half minutes past the hour, and we have got a jam-packed show for you today here on WWGH Radio. Momentarily, we're going to be joined by Marion Public Health Commissioner Tracy Kinzler. I believe this might be Tracy coming down the pike here right now, and trust me, there's a lot to talk with Tracy about. And as we have done each and every, we did it each and every Tuesday for a while. Now it's every other Tuesday during this pandemic. It's always a pleasure for us to turn to our Marion Public Health Commissioner with a lot of questions in a very big, well, really important few-week period when it comes to our kids in school in this area. Marion Public Health Commissioner Tracy Kinzler. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Tracy, during this pandemic that has now gone on about 6 months, is this one of the more stressful times with kids going back to school and so on and so forth?
It has been very stressful trying to figure out the plans and how to keep everybody as safe as possible when you still have that active infection going on. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, this is going to be a big month coming up to see how everything unfolds.
When we talk about this hybrid model that, a lot of the schools here in the county will be, is there any school that's not switched to the hybrid model in Marion County at this point?
I think that St. Mary's is doing the all-in method, and I'm not sure about the Marion Prep, how they decided to go, but all of the other schools are doing the hybrid model.
Have all the school, why did they decide on this ultimately?
Well, a couple of things. Our incidence rate is still high here in Marion, so that means that we have community spread at a higher rate than we should. So that played into their decisions because, you know, with that spread being so high in the community, it's very likely to get into the schools. And then from my perspective, the other reason that the hybrid model was a good idea is because it allows us time to figure out if their plans worked without having all of the kids in school to create bigger outbreaks where we have, you know, some weaknesses in plans or whatever. So it gives us the opportunity to say only half the kids are here, and we tried this, and we didn't like the way that worked, so we're going to implement something else, and it will be easier to implement. And then if they do happen to get outbreaks, it will only impact part of the kids, not the entire population. So that allows us to control it better, and it allows the schools to stay open because you have a lot more kids who are not impacted by cases in the school.
Just up the road here, about 45 minutes, we learned about a month ago that Franklin County was not going to go back to school as far as in the building goes. They're going to do remote learning. How much did that impact decisions made in places like Marion?
Well, you have to weigh everything out. And so it certainly was, you know, something to talk about, discuss, and, you know, think about why are they doing what they're doing. And a lot of times we look to Franklin County as a lead, you know, and we try to follow their lead. But then also you've got to consider that their case count is significantly higher than ours. So, you know, where we hover around 2,800 or so because of the prison outbreak, they're up to like 18,000. So it's much more prevalent there. And so I think that they probably made the right decision being in that urban setting where people are closer together versus Marion, where, you know, we're not living in apartment buildings and stuff. You're able to quarantine better and control the virus a little bit better. So, you know, you have to kind of follow their lead, but also figure out where you differ and kind of make your decisions that way.
This is the question that I keep getting asked about this before we go back to the buildings, which will happen here very soon. Much like the prisons, it is a lot of people in a condensed area. If somebody would go into the school and maybe be asymptomatic, and during the course of a day in high school, you're going to come in contact with a lot of people. People in the lunchroom, your teachers, people in different classes. If there was an outbreak, couldn't it be on the level of what the prison situation was?
It definitely could. And so that's why the schools are putting in a lot of plans to try to keep that from happening. And so with that hybrid model, when the kids are in their classrooms, they're going to be able to spread out a lot farther because only half the kids are in there. So when we can maintain that 6 feet distance and everybody's wearing a mask, if there is a case in your classroom, that decreases your chances of catching it. If they have to put their desks closer together than 6 feet, it would just be the kids that are right around them. I think a lot of them are going to be eating lunch in their classrooms rather than in the cafeteria, so they can maintain that distance. So, you know, if the schools, their administration, and their teachers buy into that system and take it seriously and enforce it, then they're going to be able to control how far outbreaks and cases spread. If, you know, they're not able to do that, then that's when we're going to see widespread outbreaks.
Is it possible or logical for that to happen with first and second graders?
Right. That's, you know, that's where it's going to be, remain to be seen. In elementary schools, we don't see the number of positive cases as we would more in the high schools and older. So there's a lower likelihood of outbreaks in elementary schools based on, you know, what the CDC is saying. But, you know, we have to kind of look at that because people have not been in school in the United States until this month. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff to kind of figure out and lessons to learn and things like that so that we can continue to modify and plan out. And, you know, the idea is to keep kids in school as long as we can. And I'm sure that if it starts to look like there's outbreaks popping up and that what our best efforts aren't working, then the governor's going to have to look at that again and see, you know, what his best actions are moving forward.
You know, God forbid there was an outbreak in any school anywhere, but especially here in Marion County, because this is where we are. How would something like that even be handled? Because people do come in contact with so many people every day. Would the whole school be evacuated? How could you even say who you were in contact with in a given day?
Yeah, that's going to be an important factor in deciding what to do, is how successful they are at figuring out who the person has been in contact with. And so you go back 48 hours from the time the person became symptomatic, and you look at where they were in that time period. So all the teachers are going to keep seating charts. The kids are going to have to stay in those seats. When they get a positive case, we're going to get those seating charts from them, find out who they've been around, how often they're traveling down the hall, what the situation has been with the hall situation. Are they able to keep people pretty much separated, or is there a lot of people there? Are they playing sports? What are their interactions? And the better that the school can answer those questions, the more we're going to be able to contain the outbreak. If they're not able to answer those questions, we're probably going to be seeing spread. And the other point to make to that is, for the CDC, they define an outbreak as two cases or more in the same facility. And so obviously in a big school like Harding, two cases is not going, you know, at the same time, is that's likely to happen. So we wouldn't be shutting down the school just because it technically meets the definition of an outbreak. Mm-hmm. However, if we started seeing cases popping up in several different classrooms, then it might be time for us to have conversations with the school and with the Ohio Department of Health, and perhaps shut down for just a few days, do some deep cleaning, and let things calm down.
During the conversation that you and the schools have been having here in Marion County, what is the big topic of conversation? What has been discussed the most?
Masks. That's the biggest thing. Everybody's trying to figure out how they're going to make that happen. So, you know, people were talking about face shields and teachers, you know, making that choice to wear a face shield instead of a mask, which then the governor came out this weekend and kind of clarified his order. Face masks are kind of an option of last resort. And so how are we going to keep the masks on the kids? How are we going to enforce the masks? You know, those kinds of questions are the ones that come up the most with the schools. And then also sports and what's going to happen with sports. And I think today we're going to find out more about that from the governor, as he's saying that he's going to release sports guidance today. So hopefully we can get those questions answered.
That is a big announcement today, and that certainly is going to be a topic of conversation. But with the Big Ten canceling college kids and saying, we don't feel safe enough to do this, and I believe, again, Franklin County, there is some schools up in Cleveland which have said, we're just not going to do this. We don't care what the guidelines are, extracurricular activities, it's too much of a risk, we can't do this. No matter what the governor ends up saying today, if it's okay or not, in your opinion, as a medical expert, do you think that kids should be out on the football field? Because that's the one that everybody talks about.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just like the school setting itself. If I were looking at this in a bubble and the only thing I was concerned about was the virus, I would say no, they shouldn't be playing sports because it's a surefire way to spread the virus. You're breathing on each other a lot and that kind of thing. However, you can't look at it just as the virus. You have to look at the long-term consequences and the effects that it's going to have, you know, on people. And sports is a big part of people's lives. It's how they get scholarships to go to college, and not being able to do that is going to have long-term consequences, perhaps worse than getting the virus. So it's this constant back and forth battle between how do you balance this out. And so for me, it's up to the coaches and the school staff to say, you know what, we want to play football, but we want to take this virus seriously too. And if somebody feels a little bit sick, or if somebody was in contact with someone else who was positive, then it's up to those coaches to model that behavior that we want to see, stay home. And if they don't do that, and if they're letting people on the team play when they're symptomatic, or, you know, when they should be quarantining, then we're going to have a problem. And I can see something, you know, an order coming out about sports because we weren't able to contain the virus.
Do you think this confuses a lot of people who maybe don't have kids in high school? And certainly there are aspects to sports that are very important. But we have rules in Ohio. You can't go into a restaurant. You can't go anywhere at this point without wearing a mask. We can't serve alcohol after 10 o'clock. But we can have kids playing football on Friday night.
Yeah, it's definitely confusing. And there's been a lot of that since the beginning of this. You know, we had in the beginning, if you remember all the way back to the spring, when they came out with a list of businesses that were essential, a lot of us were saying that business is an essential. How are they defining this business as essential, and how come this one isn't? And so we're still seeing those contradictions. And I think it's just trying to figure out how to balance everything as best as possible. And so, you know, the governor has tough choices to make. And, you know, he's trying to make them as best as he can, and he's trying to balance what the population wants, what people want, what's going to keep us mentally sane. You know, all of those kinds of things are weighing into it. So, but I definitely think there's a lot of contradictions.
In Marion right now, as we have it, where do we stand?
We have 545 cases right now. That's excluding the prison. We are right on that bubble between being red and orange. So last week we thought we were going to go down to orange, but then on that Wednesday when they pulled the data, a handful of cases came in, and it pushed us back up to red. So it literally depends on when they pull the data. What happens on Wednesday is going to make a big difference for us, because we are right on that bubble of being back down to orange possibly. So we're hopeful that we're going to go to orange, but even if we do go down to orange, we're still at the top of the orange, you know, we're dark orange, and could pop back up to red, just depending on how our cases come in.
Do we know, because I think this has been something for people who don't know anybody who has it, do we know what the condition of the majority of these people are who have it? Are they at home quarantining? Are they in the hospital? Do we have a lot of people who've ended up in the hospital?
We don't right now. And so that's one of the factors that's would allow us to go back down to the orange level. We're not seeing as much hospitalization, emergency room visits, or doctor's visits. So that's those are all factors that play into, you know, the severity of our illness and whether we're on red versus orange and that kind of thing. So no, right now I think there's just a handful of people that are in the hospital. The majority of our cases are recovering at home. A lot of them don't have symptoms, but some of them have those mild symptoms where they have a lot of fatigue, can't get awake, coughing a lot, things like that.
How are the nursing homes and assisted living centers doing since they reopened to a degree on July the 20th?
We still are seeing cases trickle in from our last nursing home outbreak. That was the community care outbreak. The others are doing really well. They are not seeing cases. And if they feel like they, you know, they may send a person off to the hospital for a procedure and they automatically get tested and then that person ends up positive, they stop everything. They test everybody in the facility to see if, you know, other people have it. They test their staff so that they can then put people together in a group who are positive versus people who are negative and, you know, stop the virus. So every once in a while we have a nursing home that will have one case. And that it doesn't go any further than that.
You know, Tracy, we're heading into an interesting part of the year. Schools going back into session. We have a presidential election coming up. We have Halloween. We have Thanksgiving. We have Christmas. And it certainly doesn't look like there's going to be a vaccine that's readily available to everybody before the end of the year. We have New Year's Eve. What do you see the rest of 2020 looking like?
Well, it's funny that you said that because the other day I was talking to my staff and we were talking about football season and, you know, the Buckeyes canceling and things like that, and that it was the decisions that we were making in June and early July and even the end of May there that are impacting what's happening right now. And I feel like for us, that's happening again. So the way that we all behave, the way if we're able to control what's going on in schools or not, over the next month or two is going to impact our Christmas. And I know that seems far away, but that's kind of how these outbreaks play out. And so if we want to have a good holiday season, it's what we're doing right now. We need to starve the virus out. We have to quit feeding it and making it stronger and keeping it prevalent in our community. We need to starve it out so that we can have a better, you know, end to 2020. Flu season will be approaching, and so we don't want to see coronavirus and the flu at the same time if we don't have to, and the way to keep that from happening is right now and the way we act right now.
Have the masks helped?
I think they have. Yeah, I think they have, because you have a lot of cases where they don't have any idea how they contracted COVID. And those are probably the cases where they're getting it, going to a restaurant or going to a store or being close to a coworker who doesn't even know they're positive. And so when we're all wearing our mask, that helps a lot to keep you from getting the virus, to keep those "I don't know how I got it" situations to lessen those. So I do think it's helping.
You know, and again, because for some reason this still gets lost, I don't, we've been doing it for months now, but it does get lost. What does the mask protect you from and protect others from?
The mask, it's protecting others from you. And so if I'm walking around with the coronavirus and I'm asymptomatic and I don't know I have it, if I'm wearing a mask, I'm containing my germs inside that mask so they can't spread to other people. And so the more of us that wear the mask, the more protected everybody is, because if I'm wearing my mask, I'm protecting you. If you're wearing your mask, you're protecting me. And so, you know, the masks are only effective if the majority of us are wearing them. So if, you know, if you're contagious and you don't have a mask on and you breathe on me and I do have a mask on, that virus can still get in through my eyes. And so, you know, it doesn't protect me just to wear my mask. So if I walk into a place and I'm the only one wearing a mask, it's not very helpful for me personally if one of those other people have the virus.
What has been the biggest obstacle to overcome in this six-month period of this pandemic?
I think for me, the biggest obstacle has been getting public buy-in. I think we have, you know, a strongly divided people on whether they want to accept the virus, believe that it's real, and follow public health recommendations, and people who don't. And so that has been really tricky to try to figure out how to balance. How do you convince people that it's real? That is something that you don't plan for in exercises and drills, you know, people thinking that the whole thing is a hoax. So that has been very shocking and eye-opening for us at the health department and, you know, trying to balance, you know, trying to convince people that the coronavirus is real and that it's dangerous has been very difficult.
Why do you think that still persists? I mean, I guess in the beginning, there could have been a little bit of that. We'd never had anything like this in 102 years, but 6 months in, people dying, nationwide, mask orders. How at this point, as we head into September, can people still think it's a hoax?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I wish I knew, you know, what was motivating people to think it's a hoax. But I still get people who are questioning, you know, that deaths are not real, that we're calling everything a COVID death, what, even if they died in a motorcycle accident and things like that, which is just completely untrue. And so, you know, I think that once people decided that it wasn't real, they were able to ignore everything about it. And so they don't have to believe that the deaths are real. They don't have to believe that the masks are going to help. They don't have to believe in any of that stuff. And, you know, that does make life easier when you just choose not to believe any of it. But I wish I knew, because I feel like, you know, it's everywhere. It's all around us. And then the other thing is, a lot of people don't know somebody who has had it. And so they think, if I don't know somebody who's had it, it can't be real. And, you know, the whole point is to keep you from knowing somebody who has it. That's our job, is to prevent it. And so we want you to not know somebody who has it. That's the whole idea. But I think some people think, I can't see it, I can't touch it, it must not be real.
Tracy, I want you to answer that question, because that I've heard that as of late. And I think it's important to understand why that is not happening, because there has been this idea that every death is called a COVID death if you die in the hospital, or I guess anywhere else, because hospitals get money for that now. That's the new thing. Why is that not happening, and why can't that happen?
Well, I don't think the hospitals are getting money for any kind of COVID death or case or anything like that. So what happens is, it's just like the flu. If somebody dies and they had COVID, and COVID was the underlying issue that caused their death, that's how it's listed on their death certificate. So it's never, their primary cause of death is never COVID. So if I got pneumonia from COVID and that caused my death, then my cause of death is pneumonia, and an underlying or contributing factor is COVID. And so that's how we're calling it in the health departments, as, you know, it was a COVID death. They would not have died if they had not had COVID. They would still be alive without COVID. But if there's a person who, you know, comes into the hospital in a motorcycle accident, they're going to test the person because they want to make sure they're wearing the proper PPE to see if they're positive. If that person dies and they happen to be positive for COVID, that does not show up on their death certificate anywhere, because their cause of death was that trauma from, you know, being in a motorcycle accident. So, yes, they were positive. It would count in our case count so that we knew how much community spread we had, but it would not count in a death at all. And so we see that play out in the nursing homes even. If there's somebody already at the end of their life, you know, they've got hospice in there, they're already going through that process of passing away. We test them for COVID so that we make sure we're protecting everybody who's around them. If they happen to be positive for COVID, but they were already at the end of their life, COVID is not on their death certificate.
You know, Tracy, one final question this morning, because I think this is also a question a lot of people have, especially going back to school. How would you know, besides a test, if you had it but you weren't showing any symptoms? Is there any symptom that comes up? Is there any way you feel? Is there anything that would let you know, aside from going and getting the test, that you were a carrier?
Not likely. So if you're truly asymptomatic, you would not know. Unless you were at a place. So if I have in my household and somebody in my household became positive and we're sharing a very small space together, I probably have it too, even though I'm not testing or I'm not showing symptoms. So a lot of times we may have somebody who they're a probable case because they're so close to the person who's positive. And you're not able in your household. Some people are able to go to use a different bathroom and sort of seclude themselves. Others, our houses are so small, we can't do that. So you could say, I think I'm positive, you know, just from my interactions, and I need a quarantine, you know, for that 2 weeks and see if I become symptomatic during that time. But other people, when we say asymptomatic, it could be that you showed a symptom, but you weren't realizing it. And so you chalked it up to allergies, or one day you had a really bad headache and you couldn't figure out why. Or maybe that headache lingered for 3 or 4 days. And you don't think that it's COVID, but those kinds of symptoms are COVID. People are showing, we're actually seeing more people with nausea, diarrhea, that kind of stuff than we're seeing with fevers right now. So you think you just have a GI problem, but it's actually COVID.
So a bad headache can be a sign of COVID.
Yeah, we have had some people who are positive, and that's their only symptom. They have a headache that lasts 3 or 4 days.
Isn't that interesting? And Tracy, finally, before we part ways, is there any condition in your mind that the Marion Public Health Department would say to the schools or to the athletes who might be out there on Friday night, depending on what the governor says today, we should not do this in Marion County. We should not be in these school buildings. We should not be out on the field on Friday night.
If we started to see right away that we were not able to control an outbreak, so we had a couple of cases, but then it grew and we started to have outbreaks, and we saw that the plans and the systems that we put in place were not working, I could see that we would want to shut down and regroup and see, is there a possibility of changing the situation? But it would, I think, you know, remain to be seen, is that in one school district? Is that in one building? Because, you know, if one school system's not able to get it under control because of the sort of culture in their population, but another is it fair to shut everybody down? So there's a lot of questions that would have to be answered and a lot of digging into the reasons behind something before I would want to do something drastic like shut everything down.
Mm. Marion Public Health Commissioner Tracy Kinsler. Tracy, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And there you have it. Now, it's interesting because we are heading into a fascinating time because schools are going to go back on this hybrid model as we have it now. The governor's going to make his decree today on high school sports. We don't know exactly what that's going to be. It's going to be fascinating. Does anybody have any thoughts on this, what Tracy Kinsler just had to say, or anything on the announcement that is expected to come today in regard to high school sports, football in particular? 42, coming up on 43 minutes past the hour. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Any thoughts on what's going on with the whole COVID situation in regard to schools, in regard to athletics? Where's it all going to end up? We don't know. Do you think that kids should be playing sports, football in particular, on Friday nights? This has become a thing, and I think Tracy said it very poignantly there. COVID's a factor. Certainly it is. But these kids are also facing a lot of other factors, going to college and playing sports, the mental health of getting out and doing something. It's all very tricky. And how would crowds be handled at these football games? Would there be allowed to be any crowds? Would there be allowed to be cheerleaders? Would there be allowed to be bands? I think a lot of these questions will probably be answered by the governor today, but it's very, very tricky. 44 minutes past the hour, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz and we can talk about whatever is on your mind in regard to any of this. Now, yesterday, we continued along with our Marion, I guess we call it Marion Past History Stories. And a few things popped up yesterday. I got to tell you, I ran into somebody, was it yesterday? Yeah, I think it was yesterday. Ran into somebody yesterday who did remember the Isley's Sunday, in which you used to go into the Isley shop, and if you ate this huge sundae, you would get a t-shirt. Now, does anybody else remember that? Because I wasn't sure if that was even a thing. I got a message on Facebook about that, and I had never heard of that. I'd never heard anybody else talk about it. Last week when we opened up the phone lines, we really didn't hear anything about that. But somebody did come up to me in the store yesterday and say they did remember that, and they did remember the t-shirt that you got if you ate that big sundae. Does anybody else remember the big sundae that the Isley shop used to have? Does anybody remember anything from Friendly's? We talked about the Fribble. I don't remember the Fribble either. I don't know why that has totally evacuated my mind, but we talked yesterday some more about the Fribble, which was the milkshake that was given at Friendly's. And somebody the other day, or was it yesterday, came up to me and talked about Virgil Dye. Now, if that person's listening, give me a call, because this Virgil Dye story is very interesting, and I don't want to tell it wrong. But apparently Virgil Dye was the manager of the Harding Hotel. And at some point, he committed suicide by jumping out the window at the Harding Hotel, which is just horribly unfortunate for him and his family. But I got some more information on that yesterday as I was out in the public. So if you have any more information on the Virgil Dye situation jumping out of the window of the Harding Hotel, I guess he was the manager, give me a buzz here, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And again, we've also talked a lot about Johnny Long, who was a police chief here in Marion, who what they ruled a suicide, committed suicide at his desk at the police station. And everybody always says they can't believe that Johnny Long would do that because he was such a happy guy. And that was a huge, huge story here in Marion for a long, long time. We talked about Gracie's Place last week, which was apparently an interesting spot out on Route 98. And there was a lot of talk about Sheriff Obenauer, who would have been sheriff at the time that building was open. And again, I guess that was a house of ill repute, that Sheriff Obenauer may have known about. I don't know how you couldn't know about it, but what his connection was to it. Some people said on the air last week that he might have been receiving money, not to say anything about it, or he just turned a blind eye to it. I really don't know. Was there anybody in town who didn't know about Gracie's Place out on Route 98? Because apparently this was not a secret. What was it, a very well-known part of Marion? Give me a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Would love to hear what you have to say about all this. We talked about parishes. Ice cream stand on Main Street, I guess is where that was. We talked yesterday about the Holly Shop, but apparently the Holly Shop in the 30s, I think it was where the numbers game was run here in Marion. Now, I had no idea. Well, there was organized crime everywhere, but I really don't know the stories of organized crime here in Marion. Does anybody know anything about that era of when things like that were going on, when people were running numbers? We've always talked about mob and things of that nature. I don't know if that existed here in Marion or if that was a well-known thing. It existed a lot of places. Certainly in Cleveland, I think there were stories of that. But does anybody stretch back and remember anything in Marion of that particular type? If you do, give me a call. Courtesy Inn. We talked about Courtesy Inn last week. The old Courtesy Inn motel that used to reside on Route 309. I believe it's where Tire King is now. And they had a restaurant there. The only thing I remember about the restaurant was greasy food, and they were open on Christmas. That's all I remember about it. But they also had a lounge, and I think we learned last week that the lounge had singing in it. We learned a lot about Fair Park Sundries and Dorothy Northrup over in the Fair Park area. Does anybody remember the year that Hardee's and the Fair Park Family Restaurant and all of that was built over in the Fair Park area? That area came up fast. Now, yesterday we had a little bit of a conversation about that, and we learned that the Fair Park housing development came before all that, came before all that commerce down there, the department store and the little strip mall and all those things. But does anybody remember the development of the little Fair Park area there? And apparently that old Fair Park barber shop is still in business over there. I don't know how long they would have had to be in business now, but my goodness, they've had to have been there for over 40 years at this particular point, maybe longer. Does anybody have any stories of the old Fair Park barbershop? Does anybody have any stories of barbershops in general? Because barbershops used to be a place where people gathered in town and I think had a unique experience. Everybody knew their barber. It was usually a gentleman. These places were in business for a long, long time. Does anybody remember the barbershops of Marion that people used to congregate in? Does anybody remember the bars in Marion that people used to congregate in? What were the popular bars where people would go if they wanted an adult beverage? There are things like that that we really have not talked about. Are there any memories of things like that? Give me a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. The phone lines are open here this morning. Let's see what we got coming down the aisle. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, good morning, Scott. How you doing this morning?
Great. How are you?
Oh, I'm just terrific, man. Just terrific. Hey, Scott, getting back to the barbershop. Now, I hear you mentioned a few barbershops. Now, can you remember Herb's barbershop down on West Center Street? That's almost on the corner of David's, you know, Center, 309, and so on and so forth.
I remember the loaner shop.
Barney's, or Herb's barbershop.
I think I do remember that.
And Bill was saying this way back that he would cut a hit a hair every time the light changed out there. Now, and just talk. I talked all the time and it didn't take him no time to cut your hair.
So Herb knew what he was doing.
Now, and another shop is kind of old too. Now they got one out on Bellefonte Avenue. Barney's, and there was two barbers there, Barney and the other one passed away. I know them both. Barney, I think, still there. Now, does anybody remember that one?
I don't remember Barney's, but Barney is Barney still out there running the barbershop?
pretty sure he is. You know the barbershop that's out there, and that, well, just before you get, just across the tracks there, on the left, that's where his shop would be. Well, it is. It still is. And I'm almost sure it is still running it. Barney, I believe Barney's his name. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I went many, many times, but he had another Jim. I believe his name was Jim. Jim and Barney. Now, Jim had a problem, I think. He passed away. Barney, he had a serious problem back, but he overcome his, and I think he's still there. So, and there was another well-known barber shop there on North Main Street.
Well, you know,
two guys in there, father and son.
Now, was that the one that was across from, like, where the county building is now?
That's the Lunar Shop. You mean on county building on North Main Street?
On center down here, like down in the Palace area.
Well, now they were one there, too.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Now they were one up on North Main Street. You see, I don't know what, between the tracks or a little bit, let's see, maybe it's a little bit north of the track. I believe it's a little bit north of the track. Now, we're going way back there, and they were two barbers in there, man and son, father and son, and I've been in there many a time. So I can't think of their names now. I ain't too good about names, but I do remember the barber shop, and I remember one down on West Center too. When that the one you was talking about, I remember that. That's getting back there a little while, too.
You know, these barber shops used to be such important places. People would gather in there. They would talk.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, Herb's. Well, this one on Main Street, too. You had to stand in line in there, man. Even in Herb's. But you didn't have to sit very long in Herb's. The more people you got, the faster you got.
Herb knew how to cut hair.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He didn't mess around, I mean. If you wanted a fast haircut, go to Herb's. Oh, he was a nice guy. Herb was a nice guy. And he cut your hair. He cut your hair. It didn't take it very long, either. And back, way back, Scott, I can't remember what it cost it then. It wasn't very much. Not nothing like it is now. I mean, you make a pretty good living cutting hair now, even though there are a lot of long-haired people. But them shops I'm telling you about, other people I probably would know about it too. So, what was his name?
Lerner Shop.
You remember Lerner Shop uptown?
Lerner Shop. I do remember that. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
All right.
That's just a few old things that maybe somebody could bring more about it and so on and so forth.
Well, hey, I appreciate the call. Thank you for calling.
Okay, you have a nice day.
Bye-bye. All right, well, there's some barbershop, 740-383-9944. Now, does anybody remember this Herb, who apparently used to cut hair at a very fast rate, or the Lerner Shop? Does anybody remember the Lerner Shop? What that was all about? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. 57 and a half minutes past the hour here. Let's see what's coming down the pike. Go ahead, caller.
You're talking about barbershops. Does anybody remember Harold Detweiler?
Harold Detweiler. I don't remember that.
Harold Detweiler. He was down there by the Midway. Oh, not, yeah, Midway.
Really?
He was in with another guy, but I can't remember his name.
So Harold...
I just remember Harold because my mom dated him.
So he was an old-fashioned barber.
Oh, yeah. He was an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah.
Rest his soul.
Well, that's interesting. Thank you.
Have a good show.
Bye-bye. All right, there's another old barber, Harold Detweiler. I wonder if old Harold Detweiler is still alive. 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz. Does anybody remember these? Well, we definitely triggered something now. 58 and a half minutes past the hour here. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott. Bonnie Miller run Barney's down there between the tracks on Bell Fountain Avenue. It's still open, but Barney passed away, I think it was in March.
Oh, Barney has passed away.
Yes, he's my friend. He passed away.
Now, how old a guy was Barney?
I think Barney was 67, I think.
Now, was he still cutting hair back in March?
Yeah, he was cutting hair right up till the time he passed away about. He took a couple of weeks off, but, yes.
Oh. Now, do you remember Jim, who used to be in there with him?
Jim Lake. Yes.
Oh, okay.
See, they both used to smoke. I mean, smoke big time. Okay. Jim Lake got cancer.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, Jim passed away. And Bonnie got cancer, too, with the throat and the mouth.
Oh.
And he had big operations on his mouth and stuff, and it altered his speech some, but he survived it, which, you know, I didn't think he would. You could go in there, and the time you left, you thought you was in a bar all day or something because you stunk.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't like smoking. I don't smoke. If I did, I'd smoke a little marijuana, but I don't.
Why?
But anyway,
yeah.
That's broken. I can't stand it, huh?
Yeah, well, no, I appreciate the information on Barney.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
My phone's fading, I think, at times.
Okay.
But anyway, Barney passed away. Nice guy. Super guy. And another one, barbershop, is Lowell Munn there between Main Street and there's on East Church, actually, between Main and State. Where the buildings are empty now downtown, they're empty right in there. But Lowell Munn and his dad was in there for years.
Oh, interesting.
They was a popular barbershop, too, like Herb's was way back when I was a kid. You know, we used to say you could stop at the stoplight, run and get a haircut, and get back out. You could make the light.
Apparently, Herb knew what he was doing.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it could be 20 people in there. He could take you out about 3 minutes. He was out.
Well, hey, thanks for the information. I appreciate it.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to break. We'll be back.
In his face, I had my hand up and so forth, but he's afraid of my questions and my question. Why a war?